Welcome to WMKV Health Scope, a weekly discussion of health and wellness issues for older adults, their families, and caregivers. This call-in program is presented by 89.3 WMKV. To have your medical-related question concerning today's topic answered live on the air, call 513-772-9658. That's 772-WMKV. And now, WMKV Health Scope.
We thank you so much for joining us for Health Scope today. We have some notable faces of a particular disease that I'm going to mention. But what do we, the general public, really know about this particular disease? Now, if I mention Muhammad Ali or Michael J. Fox, the name Parkinson's disease might jump to mind, but that may be the only thing many of us really understand or know about Parkinson's. And today, here on WMKV Health Scope, we continue the discussion of Parkinson's disease, learning more about it. For some of us, maybe this is the first time you've heard this program or our discussion. And we have a very, very special guest from the James J. and Joan A. Gardner Family Center for Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders at the UC Neuroscience Institute. He is also Associate Professor of Neurology at the UC College of Medicine. We welcome back to the microphones here at HealthScope, Dr. Freddie Revilla. Dr. Revilla, thank you so much for being here with us and talking about Parkinson's today.
Thank you, George, for inviting me.
Let's talk about some of the basics, and I meant that very much about the fact that some of us may hear a name like a Michael J. Fox or a Muhammad Ali, and we think Parkinson's, but I think most of us really don't have a good grasp on what exactly is Parkinson's disease, and you were kind enough to join us on a previous show. I'd like to start, though, back at some of the basics. And later in the program, we'll hear about some new treatments. We'll talk about the Sunflower Revolution, which is really exciting, and some of the other community participation and research into Parkinson's. But let's get to the basics. Can you give us a thumbnail or a description of exactly what is Parkinson's disease?
Yes, absolutely. First of all, let me repeat, it is a real honor and a pleasure for me to be here today. And I want to say hi to all your listeners as well. We're going to talk about Parkinson's disease. It's a complex neurological disease. The basics on it, we can summarize as a neurodegenerative disease, which is caused by the cell death in some parts of the brain, a specific part of the brain, actually, that is called substantia nigra, which means black substance, where some of these cells do not work properly and eventually die. As a consequence, there is a decreased amount of a neurotransmitter called dopamine in the brain.
And so this is something, do we understand more about Parkinson's in the last 5 to 10 years than we did then, or is it still very much a mystery?
It's still a mystery. However, the knowledge in Parkinson's as well as in other neurological diseases has been increasing exponentially in recent years. There's a lot of basic research being done to try to figure out the causes of Parkinson's. We believe that the reason these cells die in the brain may be related to toxic exposures in the environment within probably a genetic background. So it may be a combination of things or multifactorial. However, the truth is, we don't really know exactly why Parkinson's disease occurs.
And what are some of the symptoms that we recognize? We've seen maybe video of a Muhammad Ali, kind of stilted motion, almost a shaking motion at times. But are there other symptoms? And what are the core symptoms of Parkinson's disease?
The so-called cardinal features or main symptoms of Parkinson's disease involve usually tremors, although tremors are not always present, and slowness of movement, which we call bradykinesia, which is the medical term for slowness of movement. Rigidity or stiffness would be the third one. And the fourth one is balance difficulty or postural instability, which is one of the most dangerous, of course, because patients with this symptom may experience balance difficulty, trouble walking, which can result in falls, of course.
And definitely, are these progressive? Do they start to show up as a small affectation, if you will, and then get progressively worse? are some of these very sudden onset?
In typical Parkinson's disease, just as you suggested, George, the symptoms start in a very subtle manner. There may be just a subtle resting tremor in one hand, for example, and over the months or over the years, the person may start to notice other symptoms that are added to the initial symptoms. So the progression, unfortunately, the disease is progressive. Again, in typical Parkinson's disease, the progression is relatively slow. However, there are some forms of Parkinsonism that present more acutely and can progress faster. And in that case, we may have to consider an alternative diagnosis. There are other neurological disorders that can mimic Parkinson's that are not Parkinson's.
We'll learn a lot more about that as the program goes on, including some new ways to administer treatment for Parkinson's. But if you're just joining us here on WMKV and WLHS, the program is HealthScope. Dr. Freddie Revilla, the medical director of the James J. and Joan A. Gardner Family Center for Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders. That's at the UC Neuroscience Institute. He's also associate professor of neurology at the UC College of Medicine. We'll open up the phone lines in just a few moments, but first of all, Dr. Revilla, I like asking certain physicians about this particular aspect of their careers. This is an uphill battle. Parkinson's disease is a great challenge because there's so much we don't seem to know yet. How did you come to this area of medicine and research?
Well, it's a long story that started really when I was a young medical student back in my home country, Peru, in South America, where I had the opportunity to see a number of patients with Parkinson's disease and other neurological diseases. And I also wondered what was the cause of these conditions and how come there are not many treatments available for this. And I had the opportunity to do my neurology training and movement disorders fellowship at Washington University in St. Louis, mm-hmm. where there is an excellent neuroscience program, and was able to do some research there. And from then, it has just been a continued passion of mine, along with my colleagues at UC, to try to develop this field further.
Let's do, for those of us who maybe had biology in high school and maybe a little bit in college, but many of us have forgotten a lot about the basic biology classes. Can we do a quick primer? I have a feeling Parkinson's is a disease that affects the nervous system. Can we do a quick primer on exactly how the nervous system works? And you mentioned something called dopamine. How does that work and why is it important to the nervous system?
Absolutely. The brain and the spinal cord are organized in a complex manner by a network of brain cells or neurons, which are connected to each other in circuits. And they work pretty much like any electrical circuit by the transmission of electrical impulses. However, when one cell connects to the next one, the communication occurs through a neurotransmitter, which is a substance formed mostly by proteins, one of which is called dopamine. So imagine a connection between two of the cells in this brain circuit, and the only way these two cells can connect is by the use of a neurotransmitter, in this case, dopamine. If the first neuron that is supposed to connect with the second neuron is not producing enough dopamine or eventually becomes absent, you can imagine that the circuit will be interrupted. And this is how we believe the symptoms appear in Parkinson's disease. The decreased amount of dopamine in the brain results in decreased transmission of electrical impulses through these brain cells. And as a consequence, the circuits don't work properly. And this is why some of the symptoms may appear, such as a tremor, which has a very defined frequency. Most of the time is 5 hertz or 5 times per second, defined exactly by an abnormal or aberrant circuit function. So the brain pretty much works, again, like a network of wires that are connected to each other, and the dopamine is the substance that allows the connection between them.
And it would strike me that the body's trying to do whatever the brain is telling it to do. Does the dopamine or do the nerves try to find an alternate pattern to be able to get to where they need to be to get that message? Or is it just a blank interruption there? I imagine That's, as you said, five times roughly, or five hertz, five times per second, is kind of the interruption rate, or the rate of the tremor.
Exactly. In Parkinson's disease, the area of the brain that is affected is towards the middle of the brain, an area that we call the basal ganglia, as opposed to, let's say, Alzheimer's disease, which affects more the outer layer of the brain called the cortex. And the basal ganglia play an important role in the generation and coordination of motor activity or movement. And just as you suggested, the brain is able to compensate for some time for the lack of dopamine and be able to still perform the required functions. However, it reaches a critical point where after that, the function is simply not there. Still, we have some patients with advanced Parkinson's disease who have difficulty walking or getting up of the chair, for example. Mm-hmm. However, if they hear a fire alarm unexpectedly, they may just jump out of the chair and be able to run out of the room. That exactly tells us what you were suggesting, which is they have been able to use a different circuit to activate the motor function. But when they are again in a relaxed situation trying to perform normal movements, they have the problem again. So absolutely, the brain is able to compensate and try to use different circuits until it reaches a critical threshold.
It sounds like we're talking about electric here, and in a way, that's what we're talking about here. We're talking with Dr. Freddie Revilla, and you can find out more about Parkinson's. You can learn along with me as we discover more about Parkinson's. A great resource is at uchealth.com/Parkinson's. And if you want to find out some of the research, some of the events, we'll talk about something called the Sunflower Revolution coming up later in this program. You can click on upcoming events, and also the phone number if you'd like to find out more about UC Health and their Parkinson's division, 513-584-2214. Toll free, because, again, this is a nationally recognized program. You might be calling from well outside of the greater Cincinnati area and need information on this Parkinson's research and the Gardner Family Center for Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders. You can get it at 866-941-8264. That's 866-941-UCNI, which stands for UC Neurologic or Neuroscience Institute, excuse me. I want to say neurologic in there. I don't know why. But we have Dr. Freddie Revilla here with us. I think one of the big questions that a lot of people are thinking, because we all expect that there's going to be either cures or preventions for most diseases, and I've just battled through the common cold and realized how mortal we can be and how some things don't always have known causes or known cures. Can Parkinson's be prevented? I know that's a big can of worms. Can Parkinson's be prevented?
That is an excellent question. I think that first we need to find exactly what the cause is for the cell dysfunction in Parkinson's before we can prevent it. At the same time, there are a number of research clinical trials ongoing trying to find what we call neuroprotective treatments for Parkinson's that we hope will slow the progression of the disease or halt the disease itself. However, there are no such treatments yet. Mm-hmm. We know there are luckily very good symptomatic treatments. These are medications that can help with the symptoms, but they don't really slow the progression of the disease. Now, having said that, I also have to give on a very positive note the information that there have been a number of exercise trials that have clearly shown, both in animal models and in humans, there's more and more studies ongoing that showing that exercise can improve the symptoms of Parkinson's, and again, in basic research, have shown to delay the progression of the disease. So if in the past I always recommended exercise and a healthy lifestyle to my patients, now I give it to them pretty much as a doctor's order or a prescription, where they really will have benefit in the future if they invest time in doing exercise at this point. So far, that is very much the best strategy that is recommended for patients.
I was going to say, I hope the next time that you and I sit down and talk, we'll know even more about ways to help to prevent or at least prophylactically work around the possibility of getting Parkinson's. By the way, if anybody's listening right now and would like to participate in the program, I know we have a lot of people listening, but if you would like to call the program at 513-772-9658, perhaps you have a question for Dr. Freddie Revilla from the UC Neuroscience Institute, you can call us at 513-772-9658 or toll free 1-877-772-9658 to get a question in here. Dave will take your name and we'll get you on the air with Dr. Freddie Revilla. Is there any way to know who is most likely to contract Parkinson's disease? Is there any kind of hereditary link? Is there any way to know a particular lifestyle other than what we're learning now about exercise? How do we know who might be more prone to get Parkinson's?
What we know now is that around 5% of the patients with Parkinson's, maybe up to 10%, and especially the patients who start the disease before age 40, which we call young onset Parkinson's disease, may have a hereditary or genetic form of Parkinson's disease. But again, this is in 5 to 10% of our patients with Parkinson's, so the frequency is very low. In the rest of patients, which is the large majority of patients, again, 90 to 95% of the patients, we believe the disease is caused by a genetic predisposition, but definitely by some kind of exposure to some unknown toxic substance in the environment. We have not been able to identify exactly which substances these are, but some epidemiologic studies have found, for example, that people who are exposed to pesticides for a long, long time may have a higher chance of developing Parkinson's disease. In similar fashion, people who are career welders, for example, may have an earlier onset of Parkinson's disease if they were going to develop Parkinson's disease in their lifetime. So there are some suggestions from research studies that there must be some toxic substances in the environment that when applied in the right genetic background may trigger Parkinson's disease. But we don't really know much more than that at this point.
And we tend to associate Parkinson's with people who are generally older in many cases. Is there a reason, and you mentioned the age 40 for early onset, which it would be even surprising to me. I don't think of people other than maybe somebody, a great poster person for this would be Michael J. Fox, who suffers from some degree of Parkinson's. But you don't think of people generally in their 40s or even maybe in their late 40s, early 50s suffering from Parkinson's. It seems to be something that we see more in elderly people, at least in the stereotypical Parkinson's. Is there a reason why it more afflicts the elderly? And is that true? Or do I have a misconception there?
That is true. The risk of having or developing Parkinson's disease increases with age. In similar fashion, the risk of having other neurological degenerative diseases increases with age, such as Alzheimer's disease, for example. However, there is a small percentage of patients who can have the symptoms of Parkinson's disease at a younger age, unfortunately. And a very good example of that is Michael J. Fox, who had the disease at an earlier age than the average. He has done a great job in increasing awareness and raising funds for research. But again, it is a small percentage of the patients who start at a young age, but it can certainly happen.
Does it sometimes frustrate you as somebody who works in this field that there's not more awareness of Parkinson's, despite the efforts of somebody like a Michael J. Fox, despite the riveting photos that we see of Muhammad Ali, the video that we had seen of Muhammad Ali? Does it frustrate you sometimes that more people aren't paying more attention to Parkinson's?
Well, this is exactly one of the reasons I'm here today. Okay. And at the Gardner Family Center for Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders, we have a mission of educating the public and our colleagues as well in terms of what is Parkinson's, and with the ultimate goal of doing more research studies and trying to find better treatments and ultimately a cure. So I would say this frustration we have turned into action in trying to educate the public and learn more about it. Absolutely, yes.
Well, let's talk for a moment. I'm going to jump ahead here because I want to get to treatments of Parkinson's, but I do want to get to something that you mentioned to me before the program here, and that is something called the Sunflower Revolution. Now, we're actually live on the air here on August 5th of 2013. So if you're hearing a replay of this program way down the road, please understand this may be somewhat dated by the time you might hear the repeat. But here on August 5th of 2013, in the coming month, in September, will be something called the Sunflower Revolution Conference and Fitness Festival. Can you tell us a little bit about this? I understand it happened September 7th and 8th, but I don't know much more about this.
Yes, this is an exciting event that actually started in 2004 in Cincinnati. We have tremendous community participation for this event. This year will take place on September 7th, which is a Saturday. There will be a conference trying to educate the public on Parkinson's disease and exercise mostly. And September 8th, which is a Sunday, we'll have a fitness festival, which includes a bike ride and a walk. And instrumental to this event has been the participation of Davis Finney, who is a famous professional cyclist, the winningest cyclist in the history of the U.S., actually, who is a very good friend of us here at the center. He comes from Colorado every year to participate in the event, and he will be here as well for September 7 and 8. So I use the opportunity to invite everybody who is interested in learning more about Parkinson's disease and wants to participate and help in research to come on the 7th for the conference at the Oasis Conference Center in Loveland. And then the next day we will have a huge fitness festival event as well.
Now, one of the great places, and we already mentioned something about checking on upcoming events. Well, here's one of those. UCHealth.com on the web, UCHealth.com/Parkinson's. And then you'll see something that says upcoming events. Now, if you are not computer savvy or don't want to try to remember all that, you can call the UC Neuroscience Institute to find out more about the Sunflower Revolution Conference and Fitness Festival. That's at 513-584-2214. We'll give these numbers and information again before the end of the program, probably once or twice. But the Sunflower Revolution is coming up September 7th and 8th of 2013 at the Oasis in Loveland. And if you are a family or know someone who has been touched by Parkinsonism, you can learn a lot more here. And this is open to the public. This isn't just for professionals and physicians. This is open to the public, correct?
Yes, it is open to everyone that wants to attend.
And I would imagine, though, for those people who may be in healthcare, it's probably not a bad idea either. So it really is an excellent opportunity to learn more about Parkinson's disease. And I guess in addition to learning more about the tragedy of this disease, I guess also seeing people who continue to fight to try to rise above it, which I imagine there are some good, helpful stories out of this as well, and some inspiring stories, I have a feeling.
Absolutely, yes. Our patients and families participate actively and are very candid about sharing their experiences as well with the rest of the public in this conference, yearly conference.
And I doubt that anybody's listening to us right now, but you also have a golf outing going on today out at Legendary Run. Again, we're here on August the 5th of 2013. And a big howdy to all the golfers out there who are helping to support the UC Neuroscience Institute as well. But this is just other ways that people can find to support the research and the outreach, if you will, of the James J. and Joan A. Gardner Family Center for Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders, and also the UC Neuroscience Institute. So a tip of the microphone to all those people out there playing golf today as well to benefit Parkinson's research. We have Dr. Freddie Revilla here with us from the UC Neuroscience Institute. And we'll come back, maybe time permitting, at the end of the program to talk more about the Sunflower Revolution. But when you say it's a fitness festival, this ties into something you mentioned earlier in the program and the fact that you're finding out that it's possible, and there are studies now that are saying that it's possible that exercise could have a way of at least fending this off, fending off Parkinson's. And we won't know more for years probably, but it's not a bad idea. It's not going to hurt you too much to be a little more physically fit anyway.
Correct. It seems that exercise is not only good for your body and the heart, the lungs, the muscles, but it turns out that when you exercise, there are substances released in the neurons called growth factors. And these growth factors are helpful to the neurons or brain cells to be healthy. And maybe that makes them more resistant to diseases like Parkinson's disease. So, as I said earlier, we now recommend, almost like a doctor's order, a prescription to do exercise. And we collaborate with the physical therapists in the community and our own exercise team at University of Cincinnati, exercise physiologists, in order to provide patients with exercise programs that are realistic and that they can perform either with the help of a professional in a physical therapy center, or in a gym, community exercise programs, or in their homes. But at this point, I pretty much require my patients to have a regular exercise program because we know of the tremendous benefits for the future.
And this strikes me as something, especially if someone has a family history where Parkinson's may be involved in family history, that's something that's good for them to know because, again, it can prolong the onset and maybe we may find out someday that it can prevent the onset of Parkinson's disease. We don't know yet, but for somebody especially who has it in family or heredity, that would be a good thing to know.
That is correct. At this point, I would recommend exercise, prevention of exposure to any toxic substances, and talking about a healthy lifestyle, and which immediately leads up to the discussion of diet or a healthy diet. Even though there is not a specific diet that is recommended currently for patients with Parkinson's disease, there are some research studies ongoing, including one that we are conducting at the University of Cincinnati under the direction of Dr. Robert Krikorian, where a high-protein diet is being tested to determine if it can be helpful in delaying the progression or helping with the symptoms of Parkinson's disease and Alzheimer's disease. So I think we will know more in a few years about these type of approaches, but I think it's as important as taking any medication or having any type of surgical treatment for Parkinson's is modifying the lifestyle into a healthy lifestyle that includes exercise and a healthy diet.
We have Dr. Freddie Revilla here with us, and we've been through the first half of HealthScope today. Dr. Revilla is with the UC Neuroscience Institute. Today we're talking about Parkinson's disease. If you would like to join the conversation here on this Monday afternoon, you can join us at 513-772-9658. That's 513-772-9658, or toll-free 1-877-772-9658. We'll continue with more of HealthScope here on WMKV and WLHS in just a moment.
The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program or of WMKV Radio, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or its staff and management. Discussion of specific points and general topics on this program are not meant to be taken as specific professional advice.
We welcome you back to HealthScope here on 89.3 FM and 89.9 FM, your public radio companion, WMKV and WLHS. We have a very special guest here with us, Dr. Freddie Revilla, Medical Director of the James J. and Joan A. Gardner Family Center for Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders at the UC Neuroscience Institute. He is also the Associate Professor of Neurology at the UC College of Medicine. Today, we are talking specifically about Parkinson's. This is one of Dr. Revilla's areas of expertise. And we will talk here about treatment and about some of the ways that we can, I guess, mitigate some of the effects of Parkinson's. One thing I meant to ask right before that, can Parkinsonism be brought on by either trauma or other maladies before we get to the actual treatment? Are there other things that can bring on Parkinsonism or something that would resemble it?
Yes, it is possible. When Parkinson's disease occurs without any obvious cause, we call it idiopathic Parkinson's disease or primary Parkinsonism. When we have another possible factor that may have played a role in causing the symptoms, we call it secondary Parkinsonism. Mm-hmm. And there can be some stresses to the brain, such as brain trauma, head injury. there can be exposure to certain medications that block the dopamine system in the brain that can cause the symptoms of similar to Parkinson's, and we call it Parkinsonism. There are also a number of other neurodegenerative diseases that we call as a group atypical Parkinsonisms or Parkinson's plus syndromes that can mimic Parkinson's in the beginning, but they carry a worse prognosis, and these diseases don't respond as well to the medication. So there are certainly many factors that can play in the production of symptoms of Parkinsonism.
If somebody suspects that maybe they have Parkinson's disease, are there some early symptoms that people should be on the lookout for, especially if maybe there is some hereditary history in a family? What are some of the early symptoms?
Typically, a resting tremor, which is usually asymmetric, meaning it may start in one hand only, can be one of the first signs of Parkinson's disease. Another typical symptom is slowness of movement, sometimes in the form of a decreased arm swing in one side or dragging one foot, for example, while walking. These are signs of slowness of movement. Other patients have abnormal stiffness or rigidity in one side of the body, difficulty getting up from a chair or rolling over in bed. And scientific studies have also shown that there are other type of symptoms that can occur early in the presentation of Parkinson's disease, surprisingly to all of us, such as decreased or loss of the sense of smell, which is called anosmia, and also the presence of a sleep disorder called REM, sleep behavior disorder, where people act out their dreams or move a lot in their sleep or kick or yell in their sleep. And there are other more subtle symptoms that can present in this almost preclinical phase of Parkinson's disease. But the most recognizable symptoms are, as I said earlier, tremor, slowness, and rigidity.
One of the first things, if you do suspect any of this, or if you're having any of those symptoms, even if it is not Parkinson's, would you suggest talking to your primary care physician or seeing a specialist in neuroscience if your insurance plan offers that? What should someone do if they start noticing some of these, either in themselves or in a loved one?
Certainly. The first step is to have a thorough evaluation by a physician. You can start with a primary care physician or internist. And when it is warranted, there will be a referral to a neurologist. Mm-hmm. And this is important to understand because the diagnosis of Parkinson's disease is mostly clinical. It's made by a detailed history of the symptoms and a careful neurological examination. There are no tests that can currently confirm or rule out the presence of Parkinson's disease, even though there are some imaging studies that can be abnormal. However, they don't conclusively prove one way or the other. So it's important to emphasize this point that a very detailed history of the symptoms and careful neurological examination is really what is required to make the diagnosis and proceed on with the treatment. Even more so, we have been talking about mostly the motor symptoms of Parkinson's, but I briefly mentioned a few symptoms that are not necessarily motor. And along those lines, there can also be depression, for example, sometimes some degree of cognitive impairment, so-called dementia, in a percentage of patients, and like that, there can be a number of other non-motor symptoms that only a detailed medical history by an expert will be able to elicit.
We have Dr. Freddie Revilla here. We're talking about Parkinson's disease on WMKV and WLHS. Our program is HealthScope, and let's talk about treatment. You mentioned treatment. How is Parkinson's disease treated? What are the different options? And I think before the program, you were kind of excited to tell me that there is a new treatment option, or at least for delivering medication. Tell us a little bit about how Parkinson's is treated to begin with.
Yes, the medications available for Parkinson's disease are many, and this is a very positive report that I can give today. But still, the main medication for Parkinson's is an old one, called levodopa. The formulation is called Sinemet, and these pills contain both carbidopa and levodopa. Levodopa turns into dopamine in the brain, which is exactly what is missing or is in decreased amounts in Parkinson's disease. As a consequence, giving levodopa to a person with Parkinson's improves the motor symptoms of Parkinson's disease. One of the problems we have with levodopa, however, is that over the years, it can cause serious side effects. And we believe that that is due to the progression of the disease and a progressively lower number of cells that make dopamine in the brain. We also believe that it would be better to deliver the levodopa, hence dopamine, to the brain in a more natural way than taking just pills 3 or 4 or 5 times per day. And that is how scientists have come up with the treatment that I mentioned to you earlier, which involves the placement of a feeding tube pretty much into the GI system connected to a pump that the person can wear in a belt. And this pump pretty much injects levodopa, it comes in the form of a gel, into the GI system continuously throughout the day. And this replicates better the natural way dopamine is produced in our brains, and as a consequence, patients do much better with this form of delivery. This is still under research studies, including in our center, among other centers in the U.S., and we're hopeful that FDA approval will occur pretty soon and this treatment will be available for everybody. Along with Sinemet, which contains levodopa, there are a number of other treatments for Parkinson's which come in pill form, the majority of them. There are some patches as well that can help, and also injections. Each one of these medications have different mechanisms of action, but directly or indirectly help the dopamine system and help the levodopa, the main component of the medication called Sinemet. There's also surgical treatment for Parkinson's disease, and this is a whole other very important topic. When medications don't help enough, after several years of having Parkinson's, could be 5, 10, 15, or 20 years of having Parkinson's disease, we consider moving on to the surgical treatment, which involves the placement of electrodes or wires into the brain with the collaboration of a neurosurgeon, and then turning on high-frequency electricity that actually helps suppress the motor symptoms of Parkinson's disease in a very dramatic way.
Is this what I've heard of? Deep brain stimulation, is that what you're talking about, or is that different?
Correct. This treatment is called deep brain stimulation, and the history is quite interesting. It started in France, used by a French neurosurgeon in the late 80s, early 90s, who discovered that this type of surgical treatment could help with tremors and later on with Parkinson's disease. So in the mid-90s, late 90s, it was adopted in the U.S. as well, and now we have a great, tremendous experience with this type of surgical treatment for Parkinson's.
Sounds like the treatment is a great horizon for us, yet right now there is no absolute cure. Basically, you can treat the symptoms and treat the symptoms of the disease. Is that correct?
Correct. The medical treatment with medications and with surgical treatment, including the deep brain stimulation we just discussed, mostly helps with symptoms, but still we are working hard through research efforts to try to find a neuroprotective treatment that hopefully will delay the progression or stop the disease.
If you'd like to join the conversation, we're talking about Parkinson's disease today on HealthScope here on WMKV and WLHS. You can join the conversation at 513-772-9658 or toll-free 1-877-772-9658. The last four letters spell out WMKV, so that's kind of nice. You can get through. If you want more information on Parkinson's disease, I will tell you that the UC Gardner Center, it's ucgardnercenter.com, is a great site for reference. You can also find out more at uchealth.com/Parkinson's. If you want to find out more about events like the annual Sunflower Revolution Conference and Fitness Festival, you can click on upcoming events and find out more there. The number to call for the UC Neuroscience Institute is 513-584-2214. Let's talk for a moment about the Gardner Center. We mentioned a couple of times the James J. and Joan A. Gardner Family Center for Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders. Tell us what happens there. Is there research going on there? What about diagnostics? What are the facets of the Gardner Center?
The Gardner Family Center for Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders has been operating with a mission to provide the best possible clinical care to patients with movement disorders, as well as develop the research studies that will ultimately help us find better treatments and a cure for Parkinson's disease and other movement disorders. This has been a team effort. The participation of the community has been tremendous. I want to particularly thank the Gardner family, who has made possible many of our research efforts in terms of supporting our center. And there are many other patient organizations that are helping us as well, including the PDSNOKI, which stands for Parkinson's Disease Support Network, Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana, led by Jerry Wiest. That organization is conducting a golf tournament today to raise funds for Parkinson's, and last night we had a dinner with them. Tremendous participation from the community. Scott Lehman organized a recent golf event called Putting for Parkinson's a few weeks ago, extremely successful as well. And like that, there are many patient organizations who have teamed up with us, the clinicians and basic researchers at the university, in order to move the field forward. As a consequence, we have a number of research clinical trials ongoing at University of Cincinnati. I want to say it's more than 20 right now, where active participation by patients with these diseases have made possible the advancement of knowledge in this field. So there is a lot of activity going on right now at the Gardner Center, and we're very proud of the work we're doing so far with the help of the community, certainly.
And that kind of research is helping with the longevity. I mean, we hear about people, and I know we keep bringing up the same two names, but I'm sure there are many others. But the two main people that many of us know who have had Parkinson's disease that are in the public eye, Michael J. Fox and Muhammad Ali, they've lived with Parkinson's disease and its effects for decades. How typical is that? Are people living longer and having more meaningful lives now than they did before if they have Parkinson's?
I think so. The use of the treatments for Parkinson's disease, especially levodopa, as I mentioned earlier, have allowed people with Parkinson's to live lengthy lives. I don't believe Parkinson's now shortens people's lives, and this is why they still can carry out a productive life. Certainly, you gave very good examples, such as Muhammad Ali and Michael J. Fox, who have increased awareness of the community, and more importantly, the Michael J. Fox Foundation has been instrumental in supporting a number of research studies around the country and even other places in the world. I recently had a meeting with one of the representatives and reviewed all the tremendous effort he and his foundation have done. We at the Gardner Center have been awarded several grants by the Michael J. Fox Foundation to conduct research and still actively collaborate with them. So I think that they have done, in similar fashion, Muhammad Ali with his foundation as well, they have done tremendous, tremendous work in terms of advancing research in the field, of course.
You know, this can be a tremendous challenge for caregivers. Are there support groups like you mentioned one of the groups that's actually out holding the golf tournament for research today? Are there support groups for families who have loved ones with Parkinson's, or are there resources where people can at least get more information about Parkinson's and what a caregiver can do to make that person that they're taking care of better?
Yes, the caregiver role for a person with Parkinson's disease is a critical one, and it carries a big burden on the caregiver. It's a difficult task to do. And we do have a number of support groups that help not only patients with Parkinson's, but also the caregivers. And the American Parkinson's Disease Association, or APDA, has an information and referral chapter here in Cincinnati based at UC. The information and referral nurse is Maureen Gardner, and I am the medical director of the chapter as well. So we are happy to provide information and support to anybody, either patients with Parkinson's or caregivers, who needs that. If you call the number mentioned earlier, 584-2214, area code 513, we'll be able to provide information and channel efforts towards the support groups, of course.
And that's one of the things, whether we're talking about aging issues, which we do on this radio station on a regular basis, the caregiver sometimes is at an absolute loss. If someone that you love just has been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, and maybe you've not heard a program like this or been able to do a lot of research on it, and you suddenly have no idea what Parkinson's is going to do to your loved one or what treatments there are or what you can do as a caregiver, the first reaction is, I have to do all of this on my own. The second thing that you have to think about, and the quicker you think of this, the better off you are as a caregiver, is there are other people who have been dealing with this for some time, and you can learn from them. Every patient is likely different. Every situation, every economic situation may be different, but there are still people out there who have been finding answers and workarounds and abilities to take care of people with Parkinson's and make their lives better. And that's where support groups like this do come in. So I get on my soapbox about that. But as a caregiver for an 87-year-old uncle, it is one of those things that we cannot say enough, that you don't have to, as a caregiver, be alone. And that's where organizations like the UC Neuroscience Institute and this Parkinson's group that you can find out more. Again, that number is 513-584-2214. We have Dr. Freddie Revilla here with us. And Dr. Revilla, let's talk for a moment about someone who suspects maybe that they may be sensing or feeling some of the early signs of Parkinson's. What is the best way to prepare to go to the doctor? What kind of information can they bring to their physician to be able to maybe get a clearer picture of if this is Parkinson's, if it's a related issue? Maybe it's not as serious as Parkinson's, which would be great news, but what kind of preparation should a patient have going in to see the doctor?
It is important to gather a detailed medical history, which includes medical records from other physicians, a complete list of the medications, because as I said earlier, some medications used in the field can block dopamine receptors and make Parkinson's symptoms worse or even mimic Parkinson's disease. And certainly awareness. Try to go to the doctor as soon as any of the neurological symptoms we've discussed earlier appear, realizing that a diagnosis is important. There are other causes of similar symptoms that are not Parkinson's disease, and this is important to differentiate. And one that comes to mind immediately in somebody with tremors is a condition called essential tremor, for example, which typically runs for a longer time, sometimes 10, 20, 30, 40 years of tremors without any other symptoms. That more corresponds to a disease called essential tremor as opposed to Parkinson's, which starts with a resting tremor in one hand, for example. So awareness is important to be able to be evaluated by a doctor early on.
I want to come back for those people who may have missed the first half of the program. We're talking with Dr. Freddie Revilla, the medical director of the Gardner Family Center for Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders at the UC Neuroscience Institute. And we have a few minutes left in the show. If you want to squeeze in a call, you can do that at 772-9658. Again, area code 513 or 877-772-9658. But I want to come back to the Sunflower Revolution, something that we talked about before. Now, as I understand now, this has become an annual event. Is that correct?
Yes. It takes place every year in the month of September in Cincinnati.
So it is happening in 2013 as we're doing this program, September 7th and 8th. The conference is on the 7th, and there's actually a lot more. The Fitness Festival is actually, I guess, on the 8th as well at the Oasis in Loveland. But if you happen to be hearing this on a replay, and we've already passed September 7th and 8th of 2013, you can always check it out because there'll be another one coming back around. So as we learn more about Parkinson's disease, we can learn a lot more by these conferences that are open to the general public. They are open to the general public, so you can come into these and find out more about this. Is there something where people have to register for something like this, or can they just come out to the Oasis Event Center in Loveland on the 7th and 8th?
There is a website and phone numbers to register, but good, certainly walk-ins are welcome. And we have a large number of people that have attended every year, up to the 600, 700 number for the conference, and similar numbers for the Fitness Festival, where the most attended event is a bike ride. And again, on September 7th, the conference will be in the Oasis Conference Center. And September 8th, the Fitness Festival, including the bike ride and the walk, will take place at Washington Park.
Oh, wonderful. So right downtown, right across from Music Hall. was just there last night, actually. Good time. But beautiful park. You need to see it if you haven't been to Washington Park and over the Rhine. It really is one of the great hallmarks of the resurgence of downtown Cincinnati. So, again, the Sunflower Revolution Conference and Fitness Festival, September 7th and 8th, 2013. And if you want more details, again, uchealth.com/Parkinson's. No apostrophe. You don't need to put an apostrophe in there, just Parkinson's. And then click on upcoming events. You'll find it there. We have Dr. Freddie Revilla here with us. And Dr. Revilla, we're down to our last about 3 or 4 minutes here. And I do want to ask, and this is a great way to take a barometer of where we are. You and I spoke of maybe a year, year and a half ago about this, the Parkinson's disease, where we stand on the Parkinson's disease setting or the milieu of Parkinson's disease. Where do we need to be by the time you and I sit down and talk next time? I mean, I hope we're talking about this again. I would love for there to be suddenly a cure and we don't have to worry about this, realizing that that may not happen in either of our lifetimes. I hope it does. But where do we need to be in the next couple of years as far as understanding and working with Parkinson's?
It is a realistic expectation to have better treatments by then. And again, the number of studies that are being conducted at our center and other centers in the U.S. has increased dramatically since the last time we met. And I think the ultimate goal of the work we do is to find neuroprotective treatments. So hopefully we'll sit down at some point and celebrate such findings of something that can help prevent the progression of the disease in the future.
For those people, and you've worked with countless number of patients who have suffered from Parkinson's disease, for those people who maybe are getting a new diagnosis in the next days, months, years, what can you say to them and to their families or caregivers about Parkinson's disease?
You're not alone. You need to join our community of researchers, clinicians, patient organizations in order to be able to work together towards not only improving the quality of life of the person affected by Parkinson's, but also of the caregivers and families, and to improve the knowledge in the field, again, towards the finding of a cure for this disease and other neurological diseases as well.
And final word, anything in research that you think will be coming out? As you said, one of the goals is obviously better treatment. Anything cutting-edge research that you'd like to mention?
The realization that most likely we will need a combination of treatments. Some of our patients take 5 or even 10 medications at the same time that can help attack the disease from different angles. I think the future will hold a combination of medications, surgical treatment, the treatment we mentioned, infusing the medication through a feeding tube into the GI system, and hopefully other neuroprotective strategies. So I think the goal is to find all these different combinations of treatments to apply at the same time in a given patient.
And wouldn't it be something if we could find that something as simple as exercise could help fend some of this off or at least prolong the onset of it? That would be amazing.
Critical. It is already proven and recommended. We have big emphasis on exercise. You're absolutely right, George.
Dr. Freddie Revilla, thank you for taking time here with us to talk about Parkinson's. And I hope we sit down again and we have even better news the next time we sit down to talk about this disease.
We will. Thank you for inviting me.
Dr. Freddie Revilla is the medical director of the Gardner Family Center for Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders at the UC Neuroscience Institute and the associate professor of neurology at the UC College of Medicine. Now, we'll give some information here again on the program, uchealth.com/Parkinson's. And if you want to find out about events like the Sunflower Revolution or any of the other events going on in this area, you can click on upcoming events. We also have a couple of phone numbers that you can call. Toll free, if you're listening outside of Greater Cincinnati, you can reach the UC Neuroscience Institute at 866-941-UCNI. The local number, 513-584-2214. And one last resource for those people who want to learn more, ucgardnercenter.com. That's UCGardnerCenter.com. We thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Dr. Revilla, and thank you to the UC Neuroscience Institute for bringing out some wonderfully passionate people to talk about different illnesses and ways of treating them so that we can all live better lives. I'm George Zahn. You've been listening to HealthScope on 89.3 FM and 89.9 FM. You've been listening to WMKV HealthScope. Join us again next Monday at 1 p.m. for another edition of WMKV HealthScope on 89.3 WMKV Reading, Ohio.